Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Ryan and Sam, I am Mike and thrilled to be back. It has been too long that I have been on the pod. I've been going through withdrawal. So excited to be talking to you guys about Star Wars again and the rest of what's going on in cinema in this current day and age. I feel like, you know, you all actually handled things pretty well. I didn't think you got too far off the rails. You actually had some pretty well-organized conversations. I'm impressed, but I'm still here to return order to the pod.
Oh, well, I hope you're not returning first order.
Heyo.
It's a little spooky, but it's great to have you back, Mike.
You said Mike? Now that's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Chris, are you happy to have Mike back?
Yeah, I'm calling in from the outer rim again, still rimming it.
Mike, this is what happens when you're back, I suppose.
I suppose, yeah. It's you're really hitting on all cylinders here.
Well, wow. It's good that the whole gang's here today.
I have to say, the Endgame podcast, for those of you who did not get a chance to listen to it, go back and listen to the Endgame conversation. Even if you're not as big a fan of the Avengers and the Marvel Cinematic Universe as you are Star Wars, it was a great conversation. And I do want to bring up, I'm very surprised that of the group, no one else thought that end scene with Peggy and Steve was worthy of one of your top moments. It really hit me in a big way, and it will always be one of my favorite moments in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm just surprised it was not brought up in conversation.
I think it's because none of us were emotionally equipped to even talk about it again.
I'll tell you what. I mean, Mike, I will say the perhaps the greatest achievement of the movie was, or of the franchise thus far was like I was very aware of like in like watching the movie, I was just acutely aware of like how much they've made me care about both Cap and Iron Man, but particularly Cap over this franchise, and how much like Chris Evans has like come to mean. So I know we missed that last moment, but I think like it speaks volumes like how many of our moments were Cap moments.
Oh yeah,
you know, and that's in no way to take away from what Robert Downey Jr. Contributed to the MCU and what he did in this movie in particular. It's just like they understood those two characters and built the, you know, 22 movies around them. It's great.
I was thinking about this today, and boys, I'm ready to make a definitive stance on this. Here it comes.
Uh-oh.
On your left, and I'm saying this non-ironically, this isn't a joke. This isn't one of my Ryan bits that everybody loves so much. On your left.
Well, okay. I mean, everyone tolerates. I'm kidding. I love him. I love him.
On your left is one of the greatest movie moments of all time. Cool. On your left deserves to be in the conversation with Frankly, My Dear, I Don't Give a Damn.
Wow.
With Here's Johnny. With I Am Your Father.
Yeah,
because the line is not Luke, I am your father. It's No, I am your father. And the line is Luke on your left. And it deserves to be in the conversation.
But it was
one of the most earned movie moments I've ever seen.
But it was Anthony Mackie's mispronunciation. He was actually supposed to say look on your left because he was like trying to get him to turn his head. It was just a disaster. It's like they couldn't get it right. They shot it 20 times, but the CGI is so expensive.
They had to record the audio with it.
I heard James Cameron shot that part in the tank or whatever.
You talked about it on the pod, but this is the sheer magnitude of this entire series, and we don't need to get into all the Endgame talk again. But because you had the same writers and the same directors on The Winter Soldier as you did throughout Civil War and Infinity War and Endgame, that's where that moment comes from, because a lesser production, you know, led effort by Kevin Feige, a lesser combination of director and writer wouldn't have thought of that moment because it didn't matter to them as much as it did to the people who wrote all these films prior. I mean, that's why this is not going to be matched anytime soon.
I want to, we kind of also hit on it on the pod, but just while we're still talking about this, like, I also think something that I'm very interested to see on future rewatches, but that I think is true, is that I think this movie also works not only as a capstone to the 22 films and a, you know, a capstone to Tony and Steve's respective stories, but also I think that this movie works really, really well as the end of the first Avengers trilogy, meaning that I think with some holes, with some moments of confusion, I think a person could watch Avengers, Age of Ultron, and then Infinity War into Endgame and like have a pretty like a pretty clear story of these characters and their relation to one another, mm-hmm. which I also think is like within the context of all that it's doing, like that's amazing. There's no reason this movie should make sense after Age of Ultron, but they did such a careful and thoughtful job of tying it back to like, and I guess you should also probably throw Civil War in there as the stealth Avengers movie, but like
it is,
you know, just but just like what they did and sort of not brushing away, like in addition to having the same the writers who've been on since first event, I think they wrote first Avenger also.
They did.
Marcus
also Adelie. Worth noting, just because you're talking about the creative team, I read an article on frame.io about the editing workflow of these movies because I am a nerd, and the same editor also worked on all the Captain America movies. He says he prides himself in that he has cut every single frame of Captain America that isn't a cameo in the Marvel cinematic.
That's amazing.
So he did not cut Thor the Dark World where Loki is pretending to be Captain America. Okay, that's, that makes sense.
Or in Homecoming. But
I like that.
Oh, yeah,
fair. I just to put a button on it, I like that they not only honored Joss Whedon, but they particularly honored the movie that was, you know, notably a contentious one to make. And, you know, I think it like, I just think that like the arc of those movies works really well. In addition to a 22 movie arc, in addition to, you know, whatever, an 8 movie arc for Tony Stark and 7 for Steve, or however many, you know, 8 and 9, or like however many they did, because they're in a bunch of them. But you know what I mean? I just think it's remarkable.
For those of you who are concerned that this has become the Avengers MCU pod, let's get back to the Star Wars conversation. A lot of news has come out in the last few weeks. Surprisingly, you thought we'd be in this downturn. They mentioned that there would be 3 movies not coming out until 2022 on, with breaks in between every 2 years. Maybe it would be done. And of course, we knew that David Benioff and Weiss were both working on a Star Wars film. You thought maybe with a bit of the controversy for the last few episodes of Game of Thrones that Star Wars and Lucasfilm and Disney would hold on making any comments about Game of Thrones and those two creators who are now going to be working on Star Wars. But no, they went head on in forward and mentioned, what, the day after or 2 days after what has been probably the most divisive episode of Game of Thrones.
That, or television.
Or television in general, of course, maybe other than the Lost finale, that they're moving head steam onward with 2022, December being the first new Star Wars film after Episode 9, 3 years on, will come from David Benioff and David Weiss from Game of Thrones. They will be releasing the next Star Wars movie. It will not be coming from Rian Johnson. Rian Johnson is still working on his trilogy. It has not been in any way determined that he would be taken off of that. But the first bit of news we have is that those creators who right now have built out one of the greatest fantasy stories in the history of television are also going to be making a Star Wars film, and I'm trying to be optimistic about it because they certainly have floundered the last 2 seasons, depending on who you talk to. That may change their opinion, but it has been a little bit off the rails, and from my own personal opinion, not the time I wanted to hear Star Wars really doubling down on Benioff and Weiss.
Well, Mike, there's always time. Colin Trevorrow was taken off a project, you know, before it started production. Lord and Miller were taken off a project after it had begun production. So, you know, we're 3 years out. I've gone on record. I'm not a Game of Thrones fan. I keep up with it because it's such a big cultural conversation and I like to know what's going on. But I was not super excited about Benioff and Weiss getting Star Wars movies just because I'm not a huge fan of what they've been doing with Game of Thrones. Is that show? I very much like The 25th Hour, which David Benioff wrote. But, you know, I don't know if Star Wars is going to be pulling from that skill set that much. But I do, I mean, it seems that it's, all signs point to that this is going to be some kind of Old Republic thing. That's exciting to me, if we're looking on the bright side.
Well,
you know, we still have an Olympics, two Olympics between the winter and summer, between then and now.
I think it's interesting that, so I don't watch Game of Thrones. I watched the first, one of my roommates, when the first season came out, got like the first four episodes on a screener on screeners, and I think I watched like the first two or three of them, and I was really, really excited for the series, I was one of the people who was like, I didn't want to, I wanted to read the books and give them a shot, and as I started the books, I liked them, so I was like, oh, I don't want the TV show to spoil the books, I'm going to keep reading these, so I literally read. All by that time, I read the first four books back to back, and while I was reading the fourth book, the fifth came out, I think, or maybe it was already out. I don't know. I think it came out, and so I read five. The end result is I read five like Song of Ice and Fire novels back to back without.
This is a huge
break.
Revelation. So, I didn't watch the show. I didn't know that you like knew Game of Thrones.
I like know everything.
I thought you were like clueless to Game of Thrones. This is crazy.
No. So I
have a what a revelation! You heard it here first, folks.
I'm gonna
what a scoop.
I if it wouldn't be so offensive to people's ears, I'd drop the mic right here.
But, oh my god! Would one describe this as the red wedding of the droids you're looking for? A Star Wars podcast
after all this time.
I'm sitting here. I am looking at Chris's body. and no, so I read them, and I, you know, if we ever get into Game of Thrones at some point, you know, I'd be happy to talk about my experience with the books.
We're in it right now, Sam.
Like, I think the first three books were like truly pretty excellent. The first is my favorite. Game of Thrones is my favorite.
This is
of the ones I read.
I'm sorry. This is literally as shocking as if you had said to me. That there's actually a tiny person in you controlling you and you're a robot. Like, that would be more believable to me. This is crazy.
Well, now that you know, Ryan, I'll tell you that when I was reading the book, I did find the first to be Sam's favorite.
Every time we talk about it, this is like a superpower that you like that you never brought up.
But Sam,
you wanted to bring it up. This is how I can, this is like how I can ice skate backwards, but I don't tell people until I go.
What?
Whoa. But after all of this, Sam, you read four books and you didn't have enough curiosity to watch beyond the first few episodes of season one?
I read five books because the fifth one came out, and so I read the fifth book, and I'll tell you what genuinely happened. I think it's kind of widely agreed that the fourth and fifth books were like an odd experience and kind of like lost a lot of the steam that the series had.
Do you know this from the forums that you're on daily?
Ironically, I mean, I was reading them, and at the time, there were a number of people I worked with who also happened to be reading them. And like, as we discovered this, I mean, it was like when the show was coming out, I was reading these. So it's not like I was like somebody reading them in the 90s or anything. I read them knowing that HBO was bringing them to series. So a lot of people in New York were at the time. So I had people I was talking to, and we all kind of what he does. I don't know if you guys may be aware of this. So sorry if I'm boring you or our listeners, but he gets to in book four, he breaks from his standard thing. So in the books, they're all told chronologically, and each chapter is like just titled by like the character whose perspective it's told from. So the books are essentially like this wandering omniscient perspective of different characters that we come to care about who are like different places on the map, right? And then in book four, well, books four and five, he like wrote such a long story for that he was like, oh, I'm going to split it into two books. And rather than like split it at the halfway mark, he like kept the whole story and he was like, I'm going to use like half the characters will be in book four and half will be in book five, but they take place simultaneously. So it was kind of like maddening and this like break of form. And in particularly like book four, I felt was like the soup's boring characters. It was like all took place on like the Iron Islands and stuff. And there was like just you were like away from Westeros and like not following the characters I cared about.
I can't believe that you're even saying these words.
I know. Don't be knocking my boy Theon, all right?
Mike, is this as shocking to you as it is to me?
Absolutely. I'm blown away because, Sam, you've never taken any steps into the Game of Thrones world.
All you've ever said is, I don't watch that show.
And that you thought Emilia Clarke wasn't a good actress, which I don't agree with.
Did I say that?
Yeah, you said you thought she was pretty bad in Solo, and then.
But literally, you're like, oh yeah, I don't really follow Game of Thrones.
I do think she's pretty bad in Solo.
You're like, I don't really follow Game of Thrones. That's like all you've ever said about it.
Well, at this point, you know, you guys are ahead of me. Like, I don't know what's going on because
the writers don't know what's going on. So get it back to, you know, if you want to talk more, yeah.
Let me give you. I'm so sorry. Let me say the last thing to answer the question of like what happened is that. I literally read, I don't know how many several, like a couple thousand pages back to back of one world that was in those last two books kind of sputtering for me, like narratively. And I was like, I can't spend more time in this space. I had literally no interest in spending more time with like shields and swords in Westeros or like that world. And so the whole point of like catching up so that the series wouldn't ruin story beats for me was like pointless because I was like, now I'm never gonna watch the series. But like maybe I will someday. Like when the end of it comes out, I might try watching it.
Sam, I actually would tell you, with the exception of really the last season and a half, you should watch it. I do think it is exceptionally well done. And I thought the writing was very solid and until what, maybe like episode six of season seven, and then it's really gone off the rails from there. But I do think you should watch it, though. I would say I would start a podcast with you and Ryan about you two watching Lost for the first time before I would start that with Game of Thrones.
Now that doesn't have any books, right?
Same thing I can tell you is I don't like Game of Thrones one bit. But I'll talk about it all day.
I'm surprised there are some great moments in it, Ryan. And I feel like
I do acknowledge that, and the production value is very good, and the acting is very good. So it's like I acknowledge that it has values, or value, I should say. I'm not sure it has values, but but I am like a Game of Thrones fan's worst nightmare because I don't like the show, but I do watch it enough that I could like talk about it. So like. All I say is, like, I'm not a fan, and then I give a lot of opinions.
Okay, tell me what's wrong with Hardhome, the episode. Yeah, tell me what's wrong with the Battle of the Bastards.
The Battle of the Bastards?
Episode.
I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with that episode.
So Chris used to, like...
got that shot. I mean, besides that, Rickon should have learned to, like, run zigzag. But yeah. that's hacky.
I mean, zigzag was also an issue in the last episode as well. For that Golden Company guy.
There you go.
So when I
Sam
lived
knows
with,
what all this means.
When Chris and I lived together, when Chris and I lived together, we also lived with Sarah of the Mean Book Club podcast, a friend of the show. Sarah has been on an episode. I believe it's our only explicit episode in the feed. Sarah and Chris used to have like, I don't know, probably like 15 or 20 people over like every Sunday. And so for 5 or 6 years on Sunday nights, I just had to like go to my bedroom and sit alone because like I was just like, I don't like this. I was very stubborn. So thanks for that, guys. It gave me a lot of time to like sort of introspect and think, and I had nice like quiet like cool down Sundays and everything. Wanted to say thanks.
Having read the books, are you interested in seeing Star Wars movies by the people who also read the books? and then adapted them to television.
For the person who hasn't seen what they did when they adapted it to television.
Right. Are you interested in seeing what those dudes are going to do with Star Wars? Or here's our beloved Star Wars?
Here's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in the fact that they seem to have... I mean, they seem to be good. I don't hear of, like, massive, like, production problems or delays or, like, big, like, major, like, set issues coming from Game of Thrones. And maybe that's because I don't follow it closely enough.
I think I have a feeling, like, that Entertainment Weekly is going to have a big piece coming out, like, in 3 weeks. But that's just speculation. Anyway, go on.
Oh, wait, are you serious? Or?
Well, that's literally just speculation. I have a feeling something's going on behind the scenes this season. But we'll see.
Oh. This is I see what you're saying. Sorry. Yeah. That's beyond. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, these people have been running this show for a number of years, and it's got, you know, massive, massive teams, huge amounts of actors, special effects, massive budgets, and it's had increasingly the type of pressure that used to be exclusive to something like Star Wars. And so I think in that sense, I'm happy that it's like, if it's potentially a boring choice, I'm happy that it's like not the riskiest choice where it's like you run into somebody who like just can't handle making a movie this big. Like, I think we're going to get our movies and I think they're going to come out on time.
That's an interesting take. I haven't thought of that, but is like they know how to make something of scope.
Yeah.
But
like they know how to run it.
I mean, that's a very good point, especially even though you're not watching the show, there's a lot of details about how large a production Game of Thrones has been and how many different balls they have to hold in the air at any time. They've been able to make that all work. So that is a pretty good feather in their cap, and one of the reasons why you can reasonably understand why Lucasfilm and Kathleen Kennedy said, oh yeah, let's go with them. They've not only created one of the most popular bits of media out there in the last decade, but they've done it on time, within budget, supposedly. I don't think there's been any budget concerns. At least the budget has been huge, but they've been able to come in within the time and budget that they've been given. So that's a big reason why any studio would want to work with them.
Well, they're used to having pockets that deep, you know, in a way. But like, there's also the thing is, and I don't think I'm missing something. They haven't yet confirmed that they're like directing it.
They haven't said. They just say that they're making this series, but I don't think either of them has directed.
I think they directed some episodes of like TV. Like I know, like they directed a Always Sunny or something. I think.
Oh, maybe they're fine.
Like, no. I mean, I think that's very, very different. And I think like a show like Always Sunny, you don't have to work with actors in the same way as you do on like a new character, right? Those guys, the Always Sunny team, like they know that thing inside and out.
Yeah.
They can
so
probably
they apparently sorry, just as an update, they
yeah,
apparently
go.
Co-directed the last episode of the series. So that's what's coming up this
weekend. Which is
so
interesting
we'll
because it's not probably as action heavy because so much has already been decided in terms of like the violence and action of the series. Because one of the things that, and I texted you this, Ryan, was that the best episodes of Game of Thrones have obviously been directed by all of these individuals who now have become famous by directing great episodes of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And that has not included Benioff and Weiss. So I can't imagine that they'll be directing the new Star Wars movies that they're working on.
Which I think is potentially a good thing. It reinforces my point of like the idea of like, In the showrunner role, which is kind of an analog to the producer role in a film, you know, it's like I could see these guys running a tight ship of like a trilogy production that's massive, that's on the scope of Star Wars and as special as Star Wars. So that is like the positive thing. I will say it is weird being someone who's been so removed from the Game of Thrones. Like
your beloved Westeros,
like television show, and like it's and being in a foreign land, America, you know, for so many years, and not being home in Westeros, you know, I don't know that I don't have a strong opinion on like what I think they're gonna do. I do think it makes sense. Like if they announce that they're not doing an Old Republic story, it feels like it'll feel really crazy and weird to me. You know, like, and again, that's like sort of the safe, not risky proposition that I think is what this whole decision. Like, I think Rian Johnson is what he's getting the risky one. That's what they're turning to him. He's doing new Star Wars, and these guys are telling, hopefully, pop and satisfying to a mass audience Star Wars, you know?
Well, so Ryan, I think for the two of us who have watched it, there's reaction following this last episode, following this season so far. For those of you who have not watched all of Game of Thrones, Sam, if you want to bow out because you're going to eventually watch this for the next 5 minutes, you can.
No, I'm going to listen. Off. I have more opinions too about. I want to bring something else up later, but just
so,
before we.
I think there are two perspectives I have on the way things have gone this season that to me inform the way I would feel about them making a Star Wars film. Is that to me, anybody who would make a Star Wars movie and write a series of Star Wars films who didn't see the flaws in what they have done this season would concern me. But then on the flip side of that, they've also had to sort of put a round peg into a square hole with trying to wrap up a series with so many storylines in a short period of time, even though they were the ones who wanted to end it the way they did without as many episodes. It felt like, I don't know how the last episode's going to turn out, but they've taken some liberties. They've made some choices that maybe don't hold up under the scrutiny of weekly, hourly-based television the way that old series would have been. Maybe in a binge way, it would work a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like, you watch it and you could say that, okay, yeah, they rushed this a little bit, but the end result did make sense. But the lack of character development that they've had this season is infuriating. And if that's the choice that they made, I don't want to see them write Star Wars characters. But I can't put a firm perspective on it yet, because not just that we have the last episode to see, but there's also a lot more to be said from they're not going to be adapting something. They're going to be writing something wholly original that is their creative endeavor. And maybe they'll be able to own it in a way that does not result in what we've seen in those last two seasons of Game of Thrones.
There's also, pardon me for the 40 followers I have on Twitter that they're hearing this again, but I tweeted about this earlier, but there is like a vast difference in terms of writing something that is to be a definitive kind of story with an end. And also, I understand that series have stories, but if you've noticed in the history of television, most endings have been dissatisfying in one way or another. You know, there's like a handful of shows that people are like, that was a perfect ending for a show. The Leftovers. But the medium of television is not built, like, it doesn't play to its strengths to have definitive ends the way that we know television classically. Binge watching has changed this, but yeah. Something like Game of Thrones, which is a week to week show, the reason that it is so thrilling is because it's playing on it's using the things that are inherent to TV, these cliffhangers, water cooler talk, fan theories, things like that. It's hard to end something like that. That being said, I think that there are like huge flaws in the writing of specifically these last two seasons. Like I said, I don't really like the show, but the last two seasons, there are things that are like, this is beyond just that. Like, they didn't know how to end it. This is just like sloppy kind of stuff. So that's a different thing. But just in terms of television in general, it's hard to have a story kind of have these organic meanderings, and also when so much is built, so much of the excitement is built into you seeing what will happen next week, essentially, like ending on a cliffhanger, what's going to happen, that is so exciting, now I'm like thrilled to see it next week. When that's kind of taken away, it's not playing to the medium's strengths, so it's like a real magic trick to pull it off. So it's a tough thing, because it's, people discredit things. It's like with Lost, right? Like, people were really upset with the ending, and they were like, well, like, what was the point then? And it's like, well, I don't know, you got 80 hours of enjoyment out of it, so
well,
like,
exactly,
if they didn't nail the landing, like, it's like, whatever.
You're spot on with that, Ryan. I wonder if it's just from you've talked to enough people who've watched it that there is that aspect of the journey where you can enjoy so much of it, and it doesn't negate everything that you've enjoyed to this point. And I don't feel that way about Game of Thrones right now.
Right. Well, and the only thing, the reason I'm saying this is that my optimistic version is like, you know, maybe they didn't know how to finish this up, or like, you know, there's a lot of circumstances. There were a lot of things going on in terms of story beats they had to finish up, whatever. But, you know, maybe when they have a definitive amount of movies that they have, like, one definitive story to tell, that, you know, it'll really play to their strengths as writers, yeah. Hopefully.
That's what
and
I'm
they won't
I'm
give into their worst
well.
Tendencies. The things that I see as their really worst tendencies, I don't think that they will really be able to have in Star Wars.
you mean there are issues with the way they treat gender?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the first one to talk about this. I think there's a real problem with how they treat specifically violence against women in the show.
Yeah.
I just don't think they're very thoughtful about it, and I don't think they're very strong at writing female characters or understanding their female characters fully.
It felt like at one point that they did, and then they reversed course entirely, and especially even with this last episode, it felt like they clearly didn't know how to write their female characters. And I'm saying that from a perspective of reading a lot of different female critics who have said this didn't feel accurate.
Yeah, and you know, like, that's plenty of interpretation. People can have their own feelings about that. And that actually is something that could unfortunately be brought into Star Wars, because, you know, like, the violence thing is one thing, but, you know, we're hoping that Star Wars will have prominent female characters. Optimistically, maybe they'll learn from their mistakes and they'll refine it more, and that would be cool. And I'd love to see an Old Republic story, especially on like a grand scale. That'd be great.
So I think the general consensus is, let's be cautiously optimistic about what they can do, because I would say, though I don't agree with you, Ryan, I think there was a lot of great things in the way they wrote earlier on in the series. I know you don't love the series overall, but I think there has been some great character development, the arcs that they created, some moments, the dialogue that they wrote with combination of their entire writers team that they had for the series. I think there was some incredibly well done storylines that played out of the course of years that really meant a lot to me. And you bring that to Star Wars and I'm optimistic about it. But, you know, there's other elements that we just talked about that would maybe give me concern. So let's try to spin it positive and say, as much as there's some discord among people who've been a fan of their work, let's hope that they can bring all the best parts of their work to Star Wars.
I think it's important, like, to just to, I guess, identify, I think, where a lot of my, and I think the pod's feelings on this initially were, which was that, like, I think we all had like sort of sinking feeling, a little bit of disappointment. And I think it's tied directly to, we are all, as anybody who's listened to any episode knows, huge fans of The Last Jedi. We loved Rian Johnson's boldness in his take on Star Wars and what he did with that movie and taking it into new territory. And there was definitely a sense of, as that movie was being released, you know, Kathleen Kennedy seemed very excited by what he was doing. They immediately announced that he'd be coming back with a trilogy of his own. Like, it felt like all the wind was behind those sails. And so to get this announcement that, first of all, there's a hiatus of 3 years, and then to follow that with that, like, the first film following that hiatus will be coming from the other, you know, series of movies that's been announced, the creators of the other series, I think it, like, really felt disheartening to us. And I think people are certainly reading into that far more than they should be on the internet, in terms of, oh, this is a rebuke from Disney to Rian Johnson. People who didn't like that movie may be celebrating. People like us who loved it may be, you know, thinking all is lost. And we just don't know that right now. But so I'm trying to come from a place of, in terms of my view of, like, here's what I think they're good at, here's what I think they will be good at, and what it means. That's how I'm getting to this cautiously optimistic place, Mike, you know?
Yeah. Well,
I will say... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was moving on to the next topic, so finish your thoughts, Sam.
I do want to call attention to one other thing that I think is interesting. So this announcement specifically came at the Disney, like, upfront event, and it was Bob Iger, Disney CEO, who made the announcement. And so I think it's really interesting. That might just be the nature of, like, who was attending the conference and everything. But historically, everything Star Wars has come from Kathleen Kennedy. And I think Kathleen Kennedy has a certain way of speaking about Star Wars, and I think Bob Iger is a CEO and talks like a CEO. So I think his actual statement about this is really interesting. He said, in reference to the gap following Rise of Skywalker, he said, quote, "It makes sense to take a hiatus. 3 years is the proper amount of time to take a breather and reset, but really gear up for the next film's release. We did a deal with Benioff and Weiss, and the next movie will be theirs." Which I think, like, there's a couple things in that. Like, one, it's just, like, so dry and, like, yes, investor talk, right? It's like, we did a deal. It sounds like, like, we did a deal with Benioff and Weiss. But then also, he also specifically says the next movie will be theirs. I think it would be crazy for them to alternate, like, between multiple series over a 2-year gap. So,
it would be so strange compared to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. People would be so confused.
I think it would be very confusing. So I think we can take this to mean that the next series of films is going to be theirs, although he didn't explicitly say that. He only talked about the first one. But I also just think it's very interesting. I assume this was just because he was there. They knew they were making this announcement, so he went with it. But historically, this type of announcement has come from Kathleen Kennedy, and I think that's that's odd. I don't know if you guys felt anything about that.
I didn't feel it was odd because they'd already announced their partnership, that they were already working with them, and it doesn't give away anything about what the actual content is. So it didn't feel too odd because it only, I don't know, it seemed like a minor note of, like, we knew they were making a series, we just didn't know when. So if it was Kathleen or it was him, I don't know, that didn't really stand out to me.
Okay, cool.
But I do think you're right in the Bob Iger statement. Just very dry, not anything.
Extremely.
He's not playing his cards or showing anything in what he's doing.
3 years is the proper amount of time.
3 years is the proper amount of time, and we're happy to announce the thrilling news that Benioff and Weiss will be making the next Star Wars film.
Well, another thing from Bob Iger is that he did announce, when he mentioned that there'd be 3 years in between films, there would be a third streaming Star Wars series for Disney Plus. We know about The Mandalorian. We know about the Cassian Andor series. They have not announced what this third series would be, but there has been information from Bob Iger and Disney that there would be one, and it would likely come out between Episode 9 and 2022. So my question to the two of you is, what would you want this series to be? And maybe just hold off and say it's not an Obi-Wan series, because we've talked a lot about an Obi-Wan series.
I want to just take a moment and acknowledge, like, Mike, I like that little moment of levity with Plus. That was pretty funny, man.
I didn't feel see like that coming. We've said it on the pod before, right? Haven't we?
I don't know.
Have we not?
I don't know.
I could never forget someone saying Plus.
Oh, okay.
I
got one.
Well, now I just want to say I hope it's an Old Republic. I just want an Old Republic.
I got one, I'll tell you. I want it to be what I thought Resistance was going to be animated. I would love to see a squadron, you know, like a Rebel Squadron show of, you know, starfighters out there, like, training and going behind enemy lines and running missions. Like, that, I think that'd be fun.
I want to see some Jedi. I want to see Jedi working together.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Oh, no,
you're
Mike,
fine.
Never mind. I want to see an Old Republic show.
No, my vote for that was because they've decided that anything that isn't a saga film or whatever the new trilogy is non-Jedi related. Rogue One, not Jedi. I mean, other than Darth Vader. Solo, not about the Jedi. Darth Maul was in it, yeah. But then they basically have said anything that the Mandalorian, Cassian Andor series, they're not doing Jedi series. They're going to leave that for the films, and I want that in a series.
That's a bummer. I remember when the... First off, Mike, I'm sorry that I stepped on it like
that. Oh, you're fine.
When the Disney acquisition first happened and they were talking about all the possibilities, there was this rumor, a very strange one that was very fleeting, that Zack Snyder was making essentially a Seven Samurai, but with Jedi. Now, I'm not a Zack Snyder fan, but that idea is pretty cool, and I'd love to see something like that. I want to see Jedi working functionally in like a functioning republic. Not necessarily the old republic, but before everything starts falling apart. I think that'd be really interesting.
Dealing with the everyday issues.
Yeah, just like what was their role in the republic? Like, what, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, diplomats and kind of peacekeeping missions with lightsabers.
But wait, am I crazy though that like Seven Samurai is more of like a Ronin type story where they're like, it's like after a fall, right?
Well, I think in terms of Seven Samurai, I mean, I may be mistaken here, but isn't Seven Samurai like there are seven samurai like in a village to like
to protect
while a
the
threat
village,
is
right?
coming?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they all
right,
fight off the threat,
right?
Yeah.
And die
as they go.
All right, this is embarrassing.
It's been a long time since I've seen Seven Samurai.
So. I haven't seen it, but my understanding of it. So, like, I'm
well,
I'm
hold
talking,
off, Sam.
But I thought my
first
understanding
off,
of the movie, was that they were essentially like Ronin. They their city had fallen or they were lost, and so they stepped in to save this town on like a fool's errand. But maybe I'm wrong because it also it's like.
You mean they were Ronin in as much as like they were samurai who were serving no master?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Like, I think they're like...
The only
I mean,
reason,
it's like Magnificent
I'm not kidding.
Seven, you know? It's like,
I'm not kidding. This is Kismet. The only reason I know what that means is because 3 days ago, I started watching John Frankenheimer's Ronin.
It's great.
Starring
it's like
Robert
one of my
De Niro.
It's like one of my favorite movies of all time. It's
and,
so freaking
and,
good.
Like, I put it on as a whim, and that's, like, the opening title card is, like, a Ronin is.
Seriously. Seriously, guys, you know I love James Bond. Ding, ding, ring your bells. Take a shot if you're playing along with the drinking game that I've got it in there. Really excited for production to start up after DC's ankle heals. That's going to be great. You know, I think, like, if you like that genre, if you like spy, thriller, like, you know, guys who like did wet work for government somewhere and then doing a job, Ronan, I don't know if you can beat it. It's like my favorite non-mission, non-007 spy movie.
Cool. Then that means I should definitely fire up 47 Ronan at some point, right? I mean, Keanu really nails that movie, correct?
I also love Keanu Reeves so much.
The 47th in that series.
Yeah, I figured it was.
That franchise had legs.
You can definitely skip 2 through 46 though.
All right. Well, so we know the streaming service is still coming up. Of course, email us if you have ideas of what you want to see in a streaming series. Another one, the one will be coming out. Email us at droidspod@gmail.com. Twitter droidspod, Instagram droidspod, Facebook the droids podcast. Of course, rate it and review us on iTunes. We didn't talk about it earlier. I have one last bit of information to get in here before we wrap up the pod. I did make a trip to Disney, and I want to tell a couple of stories, but feel free to jump in with any of the comments, guys, because I don't want this to be a one-sided thing, even though I have a bunch of things to talk about. Have you heard about the VR experience, Secret of the Empire, at The Void at Disney? And I believe it's also at some other VR venues throughout the country.
I've heard about the VR thing at some venues.
So,
but
if you
that's it.
If you both would not like spoilers, I can go into limited detail because it is a great experience. And for those of you listening, if you'd like to skip, but Sam, Ryan, would you like me to go into what happens? All
right. Go right ahead.
Just okay. Tell me. Tell me everything.
So I went to this. It's in Disney Springs in Florida. It is a 20-minute VR experience where you wear a headset and an entire backpack. And this is not a VR experience where you are isolated in one spot. You actually move around a room. So this feels different than any other VR that I've done because I haven't done anything like this. I believe, Sam, did you do the Ghostbusters one in New York? Or was that...
No.
Was that Chris? Chris might have done that.
Yeah, he might have. Somebody talked about doing it. I haven't. It wasn't me.
So it is a more mobile experience. You actually walk around and interact with the virtual world that they have been able to combine with the physical world, which is incredibly cool. But when you walk in, you're given a mission by Cassian Andor, Diego Luna reprising his role, to give you a mission to follow an Imperial shuttle, find out the cargo of that shuttle, because it is a weapon that could potentially turn the tide of the war between the Rebellion and the Empire. So as you get on a ship initially, you are hiding in plain sight as a stormtrooper. But the cool thing is that you lift up your hands, and immediately when you're looking through the VR headset, your hands look like the hands of a stormtrooper, even though you're not wearing any kind of gloves in any way. Clearly, the room is set up to track your movements alongside the backpack that you're wearing. So it's very seamless, which was incredibly cool.
That is really cool.
So you walk in, and you are on a ship with K2, voiced by Alan Tudyk, which is awesome that he's still bringing the same kind of humor. You jump into hyperspace, you make your way over to Mustafar, and you arrive on Darth Vader's home planet, following, obviously, everything that happened with Obi-Wan. You make your way in, and you are disguised as a stormtrooper, and you start to interact because you look and you see a switch on the wall that looks like it's something that you can do something with, but obviously it's virtual, it's not real. But because they've paired the real world with the virtual world, you can grab onto the virtual switch, and it actually has a physical counterpart, and open a door. Which was the first moment where I was like, this is pretty spectacular, because it didn't have like a moment where you're reaching for it and there's some sort of weird pixelation because you don't grab the right thing. It was seamless and perfectly well done, which I was very impressed with. Wow. So you continue onward, and then eventually you see what looked like a bunch of blasters on the wall. And are they actual ones you can interact with, or are they just there for decoration for the series? You can pick them up, and they're so well done that you might accidentally hit the blaster and fire the trigger when you didn't mean to, which means that the game reacts to that, and they know that you're there and no longer hidden as a stormtrooper.
You're saying I might do that, or you might do that, Mike?
Saying I did that.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, I actually had some ability to wield the blaster, whereas my two other people who were with me, who were not people I knew, didn't know how to hit anything. So they were basically real stormtroopers because they could not connect on any of their shots.
That's what I was going to say.
So
they were committed.
But so then you're on like a ledge outside of the facility that's the Darth Vader facility, shooting a bunch of stormtroopers. You're knocking them off. It seems like an endless run of stormtroopers that are coming at you. It's very fun. K2's kind of egging you on. You need to get through this. Eventually, you make your way inside where one of your virtual counterparts then opens the cargo bay of what you were looking for from the Imperial shuttle. And it turns out to be the Black Saber. And for those of you who watch Clone Wars, that has a lot of history between the Mandalorians and Sabine Wren. And essentially, it is like a lightsaber, but has powers beyond a lightsaber. I don't know. Have either one of you watched those episodes from Clone War or from Rebels?
I haven't, but that's very cool.
I haven't
cool.
gotten to Rebels yet. No, I've watched a lot of Clone Wars, but not Rebels.
So in Rebels, it's there's a lot of lore behind the Black Saber, and it's interesting. It's actually mentioned in Rogue One as well. But as that is revealed from the cargo, it then flies across the entire room and is into the hand of Darth Vader, and you are standing there face to face with Darth Vader as you then try to fire blaster shots at him as he really puts all of them away with his lightsaber and easily knocks them away before he comes at you, and you think that you're done before K2SO then saves you. You leave. End of the mission. That's how you leave. You do realize that you found out what was in the cargo, but you didn't do anything with it. But it was still, it's a very cool experience. And the thing that I took away from it was I'm much more excited about experiencing more Star Wars VR and Vader Immortal, which is now coming out for Oculus. I think I'm actually going to go and buy that so that I can experience it, because this really was a pretty memorable experience. And I was pretty impressed with that. And that was the first day of my time at Disney. But I don't know if either one of you are excited about doing any form of VR with Star Wars.
That sounds amazing. I have a real question.
Yeah.
When, so you're in VR and Vader's standing in front of you?
Yeah.
You said?
Yep.
Is that scary? Like, that sounds scary.
It's very intimidating. It's very much so where I actually remember taking a step back because he's walking across the platform towards you. And I do recall feeling this very strong need to move, even though I knew it wasn't real.
Yeah, like, well, it's like the thing with VR is that it's like really like blurring that line. It's like your brain is like reacting to things that you know intellectually are not real.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was wondering if that's like real, like, because I feel like that'd be frightening, like in a cool way, obviously.
Yeah, and I felt that. But I absolutely felt that. It was so cool to, you know that there's going to be a moment where you're going to do something with Vader, but to feel like he's addressing you and coming towards you, it was just, it in my memory, it lives as something that I experienced and not something I played. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That's very cool.
So I look forward to more of that. And I'll try to make this brief because there was a lot of things that I enjoyed about going to Disney and experiencing so much Star Wars stuff. I did not buy nearly the merchandise that I expected that I would. And part of that is knowing that Galaxy's Edge is coming up, and I didn't want to spend all my money before I actually got a chance to spend it all at Galaxy's Edge. So I did not sneak my way into Galaxy's Edge as I tried. I wanted to, but I did see the top of Black Spire Outpost. I took a picture in front of what would be the gate in Hollywood Studios, but that was basically as far as I got with Galaxy's Edge. However, we also did experience a couple of other things because it was May the 4th. It was Star Wars Day while we were down there. And the very cool thing that they did was they had a series of after-hours events that had extra characters, extra things for you to do, no lines for any of the rides. So I'd have to say, what would you guys guess how many times I went on Star Tours?
I'm going, let's see.
Six.
I'm going five.
Oh, seven. Seven was the answer.
Seven. Sam won Price is Right Rules.
Price is Right Rules, yeah, I was going to say.
Well, the reason why I went on it so many times is that obviously it's a lot of fun, and I'm being a Star Wars fan, you want to experience it. But I wanted to see the new version. There's a crate version that they did after The Last Jedi, which I believe was available for the first 6 to 8 months. It was the only thing you would experience, but now it's part of the regular cycle. So you can go and experience a lot of different parts of Star Wars. You can do the prequels, the original trilogy, the sequel trilogy now with crate. I never saw crate. I went on it 7 times, and the staff at Disney was cool enough to let me just walk back to the front because there was no line at the time that we were there. They're like, oh, yeah, you don't have to go out. You can just go right back through, and then I kept trying, and I never got it. I did often, and I think at least 4 times, experience Naboo. And
go ahead.
Well, I would say, and there's always the bigger fish because there was I experienced that a lot.
Every time I go on that ride, I'd say 70% of the time I get Hoth and Naboo.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely.
I can't even tell you how many times I've slid down that cliff on Hoth.
I've never been on Star Tours.
Sam, well then when we all go, we're still going to go to Star Tours even though Galaxy's Edge will be open. That's actually an interesting question. What will happen to Star Tours when Galaxy's Edge opens? I hope that doesn't go away.
They'll probably demolish it. No, they'll keep it. It's cool.
Well, anyway, they did do a very cool fireworks display on May the 4th. They presented the entire montage of all the movies on the Chinese theater there in Hollywood Studios, played John Williams' score, which honestly, I always get chills when John Williams' score is presented in some sort of like larger than life experience, whether it's outdoors, whether it's in some sort of like symphonic gathering. I was getting chills the entire time, even though I knew every beat of what they were going to do, and it just was a lot of fun to experience that. They also had an entire fleet of droids, many different astromechs, even ones that were custom astromechs that were not in the movies. They were there alongside R2-D2. I got to get a picture with R2-D2. I had always had, until a few years ago, a dream to meet R2. I experienced that when I went to Secret Cinema in London, but to actually get a picture with him, it made my heart soar. It just made me so happy to see him.
I saw
you
sent us some of the pictures, and it was very, very cute.
I just, there's something about being next to R2 that it doesn't feel like this is a fake. It just feels like that's R2.
Well, because it is. I mean, like, that's what it is. You know, it's like, I once went to the Met Museum, and they had it was something about an exhibit about like the effect that like superheroes had on fashion, right? So they had a lot of costumes from superhero movies and stuff, and you know, they had like the Batman costume, and it was on like a mannequin, so you know, you see that it's a mannequin, but they had like the full Iron Man suit,
and everyone else can take a drink who is waiting for Batman for the drinking game.
They had the full Iron Man suit. And, like, there, you can't see a person in the Iron Man suit. It's not like Batman where you could see his chin. So you're looking at it and you're like, oh, like, so there's Iron Man. But, like, R2 actually moves and stuff. So it, like, literally is R2. It's, like, how R2 would be.
It was really just emotional. It felt so great to be there and see that. And They also had, unadvertised, they did not let anybody know that they had Death Troopers from Rogue One. They were walking through the park as well. They also had Ewoks. They had a stark black protocol droid, so it looked like C-3PO, but it had red eyes, and I have not seen that from The Empire before, but it was there. They had Phasma, they had Vader, they had Kylo Ren, and of course Rey, BB-8, all available for character meet and greets. But if you go to these after hours kind of things, those are the things that line up more than anything else. So they had at least a 45-minute wait to meet any of those characters. But then when you got to Star Tours, they had the Stormtroopers from the original trilogy. They were the ones bringing you through the line, which is actually pretty cool because they were interacting with you. I asked them, and more than one of them, I said, hey, how do I get into Batuu? I know where all the rebel spies are in Batuu. Let me in and I will show them to you. They did not bite. they weren't interested, which made me kind of sad. And then the last thing that I experienced is that in Hollywood Studios, even when they're not doing the May the 4th stuff, they do the March of the Stormtroopers. Phasma leads the way with about 12 Stormtroopers behind her, walks through the park every 30 minutes. They do an entire march to then interact with the crowd. That meet and greet that I talked about, I met Chewie, and, you know, obviously this was right after Peter Mayhew had passed away, so it meant a lot to just spend some time there, and I got a little emotional just even thinking about that. But they just did a nice job of, I was wearing a hat with the Rebel insignia on it, and Chewbacca reacted to the hat. He put his hand on my hat, and he roared with loud enthusiasm, which just meant so much to me, because that means that they're not just doing a script that they always do. They're trying to react to people as well, which I thought was wonderful.
Yeah, then, that's commendable. Yeah. They're hiring people who like really care, which is, I mean, that's nice to know is out there in the world.
And he certainly is very, very happy and very fun to hug. I give a nice big hug to Chewbacca. There's not many better things you can do with your day than give Chewbacca a huge hug. And then meeting Kylo Ren, as you come off from talking to Chewbacca, where you give him a hug, you put your arm around him, you take a picture. Kylo, you kind of feel like you're supposed to pose with him, but he won't pose with you. He stands off. It's exactly in character. And in it, I walked up to him, and I thought, why? And after the fact, I did not say to him what my first thing should have been was, who talks first? And I didn't, and I felt like an idiot after that. Why didn't I say, who talks first? Ugh.
That's
I'll be
a good
honest
line.
With you, Mike. That is a missed opportunity.
Really, right?
Yeah.
It just would have made sense.
You'll get him next time, buddy.
No, I'm there's going to be a next time. That is for sure. But then I also came face-to-face with him. I thought that was fun. I also told him, I asked how he would recover from his defeat on Krait at the hands of his uncle. He did not respond to that. He just ignored me when I said it. And then he said for me to step aside, and I left. But that was essentially my Star Wars experience over the course of a few days in Disney World. So a lot of things that are currently a lot of fun to do, but it's all going to be amplified to a whole new level when Galaxy's Edge opens up in, what, under 2 weeks at Disneyland? Jeez, and three months for Disney World.
Wow.
Thank you,
cool.
Thank you
That's
for
awesome,
bearing
Mike.
With me and listening to all.
No, that was
no.
Great. That's
thanks
awesome.
for the report. I think we've been excited about the theme park stuff for a while, and I think the listeners are like excited to actually have like a firsthand account.
Well, it's only just beginning because when I go to Galaxy's Edge, I'm going to do a 72 part series on every experience that I have in Galaxy's Edge. I'm not going to stop.
Oh boy.
Well, we have missed Chris on this episode. We look forward to having him back next
Chris.
Week. Oh.
Chris.
He's the
theories one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The hot
yeah,
and fresh.
No, yeah. He's good.
Yeah, I missed him. I guess.
Well, Chris, I'm looking forward to you coming back next week. Ryan and Sam may have different opinions, but I can't wait for you to rejoin the pod because, you know, having not been part of it for the past 3 weeks, it means a lot to get back here.
I'm sure what he's got is very hot and very fresh right now.
Do you think he's got a report to issue the way I did about my Disney experience?
I think we'll time it out, Mike. We'll take a look at what your report was, and we'll ask Chris to do a similarly timed hot and fresh and see how he does. We'll call it hot and fresh. It's like,
to be honest, he might engage listeners for a little longer than I did, just knowing Chris and the what directions he can go with his hot and freshes. That will do it for this edition of the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Join us next week, where I'm sure there'll be more news about creators, writers, directors of upcoming Star Wars projects. We'll get into all of that in the next edition of the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. What they wrote.
Maybe I'll give Alden Ehrenreich a TV series.
Ooh, I wouldn't mind that. You boys want to go to Galaxy's Edge?
Keep it in.
All right. I'm a flyer.